Alright, time for another DoNotCog.com video presentation. Okay. Enough. So, more conversation about how to intelligently, with reason and logic, describe what it is to be here as a human and as an organism that feels, you know, that has this conscious experience of sensations, you know, and some of them quite creepy and unpleasant, some of them hysterically unpleasant, some of them intensely distracting and nauseating, you know, just deeply, deeply painful. And this idea of being, you know, hungry and horny and wanting and needing and just trying to understand what that is and whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. And certainly in the context of us doing it in some individual way, you know, some our own way rather than is there a responsible way to do it? Versus inexcusably sloppy. Yeah. Some stuff like that. Anyway, some kind of conversation like that. So in Amanda's and Harry, well, whatever. So anyway, well, I forgot his name. But it doesn't matter. It's not that important. Anyway, so, you know, I didn't get past the introduction, really. And so this little paragraph was sitting with me, and I just didn't like it at all. And I know it's because they're writing their own little book and doing something new and trying to make some sort of advancement in argument, but I don't like it. And so, you know, I should just tell the truth and say, I don't think so, frankly. They're basically saying, I can't give you the whole context, okay, but, you know, the whole natalist thing is just a bandwagon, you know, it's just pop culture driving people to do this silly thing, and, you know, there's this, somehow this argument from some better historical perspective or something that, you know, is, I don't know, powerful enough to, whatever, make this argument. And so, anyway, I'll just do this. Thus, instead of the currently popular arguments, so these are the arguments antinatalists are using that they're claiming are the popular arguments that antinatalists are using that are some way or other defective. And I don't agree that any of them are defective, and they just need to be argued better. So, okay, so let's see. This first one is from poor quality of all life. So they claim that's unconvincing, is what they call that. Okay, I think for the vast majority of people, an honest assessment of their existence, they would not be unconvinced that their life was hard and difficult, and they saw things that were, in fact, unacceptable. They saw things happen to people they care about that were unacceptable, and then they saw things happen to people they didn't really care about that they know that if those people were their brother or their sister, they would know it was quite unacceptable. And so I think for the vast majority of people, it is not in any way out of reach for them to understand the idea that all life is filthy. You know, that it's expensive, that a tiny percentage of living things escape unscathed. And in any way pristine or untarnished or unrusted, undestroyed in some sense by at least part of their life. Okay, the divorces, the tragedies. If you just imagine somebody being married for 40 years or something and losing their wife or losing their husband. You know, these are monstrously horrid events that happen to people. And I think all people have some ability to make that visceral and to say, yeah, I can imagine, I can get that whatever we're going to call this life thing, it ain't cheap. So that's the simple argument. And that it's really easy to kind of understand that the very few people who do get off easy, you know, it's very few. Okay. And it really, even they can understand that concept of there, but for the grace of God go I, and that they can clearly understand that they were in fact insanely lucky, and and that's it. And if they weren't insanely lucky, they would probably be living a life they wouldn't want to live, especially having tasted a life that wasn't difficult and horrible and harsh. They would probably have even more sensitivity to the bleakness of the bleak life. There's no way. I mean, so many people understand that if you took away something that they cherish, you know, like they're, you know, paralyzed them or did something else and they couldn't do the things they love to do, and they had to just sit and watch TV all day or some kind of bullshit, that they would know this is a scary thought, not a pleasant or easy thought. So anyway, I don't like that at all. The argument from all life is not that bad. Okay. Now, clearly you probably should just qualify it and say, on substance, okay, life has this clear negative. And you can illustrate that by pointing out that, you know, 9 out of 10 of the lion cubs have to be murdered. And then you could point out that, you know, 9,999 of the baby turtles have to be pecked to death. You know, 9,999 out of 10,000. That you wouldn't want to roll the dice. You wouldn't want to be in that lottery. The lottery to be one of these animals and endure their life, okay, of being eaten alive, pecked to death, dying over periods of weeks. You wouldn't want to be in that lottery, just as I wouldn't want to be in some medieval lottery, you know, where half the males died in war. You know, you had to go out with a fucking big wooden mallet and go try to smash other people in the head with it. And the odds are, you don't want 50-50 odds in that war, being smashed with a hammer to death. No, thank you. Civil war, you know, crappy little half kill you bullets. You know, you don't get killed. You just get wounded and you just lie around dying for a few weeks, or days. But, you know, no, I don't want to be in that lottery. And it's easy to observe. And, okay, I don't need a philosopher to explain it to me. So I guess the only real thing we're arguing here is whether how long it takes a person to have enough shit happen to them where they gained some appreciation for how dangerous their life was and is, and how lucky they are not to be on the bad end of that danger spectrum. And that doesn't take much sincere thinking. Come on. All right, so we'll jump to, that's a comma, and so the next little shot is asymmetry of good and bad, incomprehensible. So, I mean, Benatar wrote the book. It's really not that incomprehensible. A lot of it is just talking about the idea of bias and how you really don't understand the difference between wanting something and needing something, that maybe that's the way to say the goods are always, the goods that aren't made out of stopping a horrific bad are made out of kind of just mushy want. You know, you want extra whipped cream on your dessert. You want some, you know, you want her boobs to be firmer. You want, some little trivial kind of crap that doesn't add up to much. Where the removal of bad, okay, stopping somebody from getting the plague, stopping somebody from getting hit by a car, stopping some real hard, brutalizing foobar kind of event is hugely profitable, okay? So preventing bad is a much bigger good than the trivial, wanty kind of goods of, give me something I'm imagining I need, not something I really need, is a way of stating it. Now, again, I don't want to be unfair to Benatar's argument because it goes deeper into the semantics, the wordplay than I just did. So, but it's a... It's a very valid concept. Understand that you don't come into the world to solve a problem. It just doesn't happen. That's not your condition. I solved the problem by being here. The fact is that you become a problem. You become something that needs to be fed. All right. And the simple truth is, the world doesn't need you. You're not going to fix it, not likely anyway. Instead, unless you think you're going to cure diseases and do some miraculous, wonderful things, the odds are you're not going to fix anything. Again, you're just going to marry somebody that somebody else would have liked to have married. You're going to just screw up somebody else's life if you end up having any kind of good life yourself. Or, you know, you might rescue somebody from a bad marriage by, you know, marrying her first. I'm not really being fair to the complete asymmetry argument. But from my perspective, the argument always was that this idea of what a good is an illusion, that goods are really just eliminating some negative condition. You're just the improving a condition is the same thing as elevating a negative. You're just going to some lesser negative condition. And that's why goods have very little power, is because they are built out of the fact that there has to be something broken for you to fix. And if there's nothing broken for you to fix, then you're going to have a hard time being an asset in any kind of condition. So any kind of, you know, we come into the world and, yeah, we can fix some things. And we can think we fix some things. And we can have the delusion that we fix some things. But you really can't know what kind of mess you made to fix them. And clearly, if you come into the world and you learn how to eat meat, and you learn how to do a lot of other things, the fact is that you are causing an awful lot of harm for you merely to exist. And every resource you consume is a resource somebody else isn't going to have available. And so there's lots of very good arguments that it's a zero-sum game, that we're really just here swimming in the quicksand, and we never get clear. We're never clean. We can just have a point where we can breathe and we can swim, but we never get to the shore. And so the argument is you can be in the process of actually drowning, you know, in the ocean, or you can be in the process of, I think I'll be okay, struggling, or you can be in the process of just swimming. But the fact is, you're never going to walk on land, and it's always just going to be about keeping your head above the water, keeping what you have, holding on to what you have, those kind of things. And so the good is going to be is completely annihilated by the magnitude of the bad. All right, that's one way to look at it. Like I said, I consider it a zero sum, because it really is, you're just climbing and trying to get more sunlight. And you can get a little bit of it, but you're never going to be in the sun. You're always going to be stuck in the dungeon. All right. And lack of consent, and they called that complicated. Okay, so they got these words, unconvincing, incomprehensible, and complicated. Now, I don't think the argument from consent is at all complicated. It's just the argument of imposition. You're making a decision for somebody else. Now, that's always, you know, that's always should give somebody pause and make them a little afraid. Like, oh, I'm making a decision that somebody else is going to have to live with. I don't think that's at all hard for somebody to understand that is that's not desirable. Let's just say that. And again, if you take it at all seriously, it's downright frightening if the possibility is you've just sentenced them to a horrible death. Because you made a decision, turn left instead of turning right. And the fact is you can't be sure that you just told them to turn left, and left is Plague City, and they're going to get the plague. So this idea of running somebody's life is should be to anybody with any kind of, anybody who's not psychopathically, way narcissistic, people use that word, full of themselves, way too confident in somehow their magic powers. Let's see if I can turn my light on with my magic powers. No. Okay. No. So I think the argument from consent is very powerful. Now, the fact that, the trolls and the idiots can sit there and play some game. Well, if the person doesn't exist, they can't give consent, and therefore you can't be controlling anything. Well, obviously you are controlling it, okay? The act of sex doesn't look like you just made a baby, but the fact is you did, right? A sperm doesn't look like, oh, well, that's a half of a baby. Well, it is. It just is. It's just a fact. So we know that the idea of what will happen is a certainty. All right. So there's no game to be played about the fact that you are making a decision. It will create the life form. The life form will be stuck with your decision. These are all facts that really can't be erased with little silly word games. So it clearly is an act of imposition. It's an act that's insanely arrogant to assume for something else that you know what it's in its best interest. It's obnoxious as hell. It can be compared to raping and inquisitioning and all the tyrants of history, all the arrogance, all the chauvinism, all of the slavery. This is the kind of mindset required to commit those kind of acts, is some kind of sense that you know what's best. And you're going to force other beings, other sentient feeling organisms, to endure based on your judgment, as if you have qualified yourself to play their God. My parents played God for me. It's just a fact, okay? They decided the risk is worth taking, for whatever insipid knowledge was in their brains at the time. And they can see that it was insipid knowledge. They were immature and didn't really think about it. And certainly didn't think about the worst case scenarios that they did fall into of having to watch their daughter die. Deeply watching. You know, not a superficial watching, but a deep, hard adventure. And they certainly know that that wasn't a price worth ever paying. And they would have gladly, I think at any point, would have said, take me, to spare her the pain and suffering. They would have denied their own existence and rejected it if they could use that rejection as a way of preventing any further harm coming to her. I have no doubt about that. So, it's a very powerful argument to sit there and play this game that it's too complicated, or that the foundations of the argument are rock solid, and that it is fundamentally, as thinking beings who can read and who are going to read a book, okay, about how life might not be all that we think it is, if somebody's going to be reading that book, it's not an argument that's too complicated for them. No chance that it's too complicated. It's too complicated for a Bible thumper. It's too complicated for somebody who watches, who can only watch a 1 minute video. It's too complicated for people who live on Twitter, maybe. All right. But it's not going to be too complicated for somebody who likes dealing in philosophical concepts and playing and thinking about the different angles from which life can be seen. That argument is not going to be anywhere close to too complicated. But anyway, that's not your target audience, so I guess I shouldn't rag on about that. But I really don't think it's too complicated, again, an argument for somebody to understand that it's one hell of a thing to play with somebody else's existence. And the fact that the natalists don't want to acknowledge that that's what they're doing, that they're playing with it like it's a toy, like it's a pet, and that they don't really think about their obligations to even pets. Are you really acting in its interest or in your own interest? And if it's in your own interest, isn't that just servitude? You're just a slave master, playing with your property, your possessions. And there's nothing admirable or in any way, it's not something you could sit there and say, oh, gee, I can admire that, or I can understand that, or, it's just evil. It's just taking. Because of some notion in your head about how somehow it's going to enhance your existence. It's not a gift in any way. It's like giving somebody, it's like giving your neighbor, let's see if I can think of an example. Your neighbor just grows flowers and you have a bunch of grass in your lawn, and you give them a lawnmower, with the expectation that they'll let you borrow it. I don't know, some kind of thing like that. The gift is insincere. That whatever profit you think the thing you're bestowing it on, you think they're going to get, you're giving them, is really just illusionary, and it's all just a story, a fable that you've told yourself. And the actual truth is you're risking a hell of a lot of dangerous outcomes for a meager, silly notion that everything will work out just fine, and I'll win, and the kid will win. Okay, But how many cases does that really happen? How many cases does the, you know, is the parent blissfully happy and the child also? You know, the odds are against it. All right, so take a pause and see if where we go from there. So anyway, it did force me to just pause and say, gee, you know, I really don't like this attitude. Okay, there's no reason to malign what I think are really credible and good arguments. All right, so in a couple paragraphs down, it starts talking about natalism being some reaction to a fear of non-existence, and that somehow the human race is doing this perpetuation thing because people fear non-existence. And I don't think that has anything to do with it at all. It's simply because procreation doesn't require much brains. I mean, that's the simple truth, right? The simple truth is we all ended up here because somebody wasn't very thoughtful, okay, about what they did with their private parts or whatever. They didn't really think about the implications and what it actually means and what you're actually imposing, and that there's a whole bunch of stuff they won't be able to control, and they're just pretending it's okay. So this is like somebody building a car, and you know, the steering wheel nuts and bolts aren't really tightened, and he knows it. He knows the whole thing is kind of just waiting to fall apart, but it looks okay. Okay, I mean, it looks like a steering wheel. He just knows that, well, you stress it a little bit of bad luck, and it's going to turn into absolute disaster. And he's just pretending, I didn't do it, and I don't want to hear it, and I don't want to know it. And that's all people are really doing when they have kids. They're just looking at the bright side. Oh, we'll have little puppies to take, you know, play with. They'll do funny little things, and we'll go ha, 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 and laugh. I'd almost say that some of it is even, frankly, it's worse than that, because they're really trying to recapture their youth. There's a little bit of, you know... There's a, you know, they're, you know, they're, well, anyway, you know, I'm not going to call all parents pedophiles, but frankly, there is something a little gross about the whole idea of playing with children, frankly. But this is the real problem. The problem isn't some philosophical point of view or the fact that they're seeking meaning in their life or any of that, I would argue, is crap. You know, prove their life or any of that stuff. It's just a bad habit. It's a traditional nonsense that shouldn't exist. And people get indoctrinated into some notion, okay, that they're supposed to paint this way or they're supposed to draw this way. You know, that everybody has to draw, you know, Rockwellian paintings, you know, and that this is what will be applauded and this is what will be in the museum. And they're just conforming to it. So it's almost like, again, I use the Olympics as an example. You have these idiotic tests, right? Jump high, run fast. I mean, just pointlessly stupid contests. You don't need to know who can row a boat the fastest. It's just totally useless. But the system says that's what you'll get a gold medal for. So that's what they do. So instead of trying to cure cancer and win that gold medal, because they don't have a gold medal for that, instead of doing something admirable, learning the skill to do something that qualifies you to be useful, like, you know, how to program the computer the fastest or, you know, or the most efficiently, instead of rational contests, we have these irrational throw a ball in a hoop contest, you know, beat up the other guy contest. Totally retarded, but totally, people are totally comfortable with that. They're comfortable watching some moronic baseball game. You know, and they don't even ask the question, why is this entertainment? And frankly, it wouldn't be if the culture was different. So this is really just a cultural phenomenon. And the cultures haven't grown up and they don't demand much from their citizens and they're demanding less and less. And it's just, you know, you know, it's, there's a lot of doom that's heading for us. You know, it's all quite horrific and depressing, frankly. But it really doesn't have anything to do with some kind of philosophical finding meaning stuff in any kind of philosophical way. It just has to do with very trivial pursuits of people. They think, you know, it's a badge. You can see it in people as they push their little strollers. They're, you know, puffing up themselves saying, yeah, look what I did, you know. And, no, obviously it's funny to me, okay, just because, you know, I know how silly it is, that it's no accomplishment. And that this fucktard isn't going to, you know, he's not going to be up to the challenge. It's going to be much more challenge than he's prepared to take care of and handle. It's going to get way out of control and way messy, okay? And he's not going to have any tools to do anything about it. And that's the tragic part. So, but it's just ignorance. I mean, people have kids because they're stupid. And so the argument has to be stop being stupid. That has to be one of the first arguments you make is, what are you doing? You're stupid. So if whether it's religion, whether it's social conformity, you know, however you want to describe it, these fake phony totem poles, these nonsensical icons to mimic, is the tragedy of reproduction. And if they were forced to philosophically explain themselves, that is, they had to go to court and face cross-examination by a good lawyer. They're not going to be able to answer any of the questions about whether they gave a damn, okay, about their kid. Yeah. Because it's going to be obvious they didn't consider it at all. They just stepped into the same mud their parents stepped into. They just thought this is what you do. You have babies and you put up Christmas trees and you sing a song or whatever the bullshit is. And this is the definition of living well, when I think if anyone really thought about it, it's the definition of failing to live good, you know, and catastrophically destroying all your potential to do anything worthwhile, kind of a thing. All right, so till the next bit. Yeah. So, yeah, this is no way to critique. I'm just, you know, I'm not really critiquing. Look, you know, people are entitled to have their own way of describing the dilemma of existence, and how people who understand it to be not an encourageable circumstance, a positive circumstance, you know, how to convince people. But again, it's not so much convincing the people who are trying to defend their existence because they already made the mistake of having kids, they're already part of that club, and you're insulting the club, so they're just going to defend themselves, versus getting to the kids before they step into the mud and give them some idea that it isn't what your parents are telling you. It's not what the society says. It's a lot more that you're stepping into when you decide to grab the puppet strings of a new living person or animal, even. It's a hell of a responsibility to be responsible for everything that organism is going to feel and endure. And I don't know how somebody could say, yes, I acknowledge the existence of the argument from you're taking on a hell of a responsibility, and just walk away laughing, saying, ha-ha, that's so easy to counter-argue. I have the great counter-argument from, it's a hell of a responsibility. And that is, fuck you. I mean, that's really all they're saying. I'm not paying any attention. Because there's no way to honestly accept the fact that it is one hell of a responsibility and then say, but I'm ready. You know, because you're not. There's no way you can be prepared for the danger, because you don't know what danger you don't know what sword is going to fall from the ceiling, and you can't catch them all. You can't catch any of them, frankly. All right, so to the book's defense, I suppose, is that, look, the bottom line argument is that extinction is the goal. Okay, you would argue that the simple solution, the cure to the disease, okay, is extinction. It fixes everything, okay? You don't make any needs and wants and desires. There's no stories that are unfinished and need an ending. There's nothing left incomplete or undone or any of that nonsense. And so if you don't make the needs and the desires and the hunger and the thirst, then you don't need to make the water and the food and the storytelling and the narrative and the playing field and all that crap. So another way to argue it, I suppose, is from the virtual reality kind of point of view, is that there's a tiny part of our brain that needs this feeding, okay, that needs to have the adventure and needs to play and needs to do this and needs to do that. And all of it could be programmed in a snark, you know, on a SD card, you know, a little micro SD card, and stuck in there. And you could just play the game in your head. You know, the card could provide this little bit of technology that enables you to see it happening even when it's not happening, or to feel it happening even though it's not really happening. And that's all it is. So the virtual solution does fix the problem of the individual brain who thinks there needs to be more storytelling and more story satisfying. And so it is embarrassingly superficial. It's just a brain problem. Your brain needs there to be a completion, okay? And it's just watching half a movie, and you're just like, I gotta know what happened in the movie. You know, I gotta see the second half of the movie. And it's just some sort of nonsense like that, and you're gonna burn, you're gonna torment or torture millions and billions of creatures, you know, so you can finish your story. And then when you finish it, you won't finish it because it's a, you know, it's a trilogy, and then it's a double trilogy, and then it's a triple trilogy, and, you know, it'll just go on and on and on, telling the story. So this, you know, this, the fact that this is all just about satisfying people's silly narratives. So the argument is that the truth about our existence, evolution, we're just bugs with brains, you know, bugs that can sing and dance. You know, we have the, you know, we can jump higher and run faster and play basketball and play baseball. Really silly. but that's all there is. There's just no other grander function to us than we're just playing a different game than the other animals. And we're playing it with math and vocabulary. But really, it's just the same game of chase, chase, you know, fuck, fuck, nap, nap. You know, it's really not that complicated. What moves us and compels us and you know, drives us. And that all of the storytelling is just silly. And okay, so we don't need to do any of it. None of this needs to exist. And you could just make, again, the simple argument of the comparison to Mars. And you could just ask the simple question, has anybody shed a sincere tear because there's no Martians on Mars? And if your answer is no, yeah, I agree that nobody's shed a tear over that, a sincere tear. Nobody's weeped a real tear because of the tragedy, okay, of the Holocaust against the Martians, of them never being created. Something prevented their creation, and what a horrible, awful outcome that there's no people on Mars. So clearly this isn't about the experiment. It's about nationalism and nepotism and, you know, racism and familialism and all of that kind of stuff. It's just about the fact that, you know, we think we need to be preserved and we need to be put in, you know, formaldehyde and saved forever. And, you know, it's just a me thing. It doesn't really have anything to do with any philosophical concept and some sort of real recognition that the price isn't worth being paid. To tell the silly stories of humanity, it's not worth torturing one rabbit, let alone trillions of them. You know, trillions and trillions. Just the thought of the dinosaurs, all of the carnage that has taken place on this planet, it's just ridiculous for somebody to make the argument that we were worth it. No, we weren't. And nothing on this planet is worth it, and nothing could be worth it. It's an impossibly, insanely silly price to pay for absolutely no productive improvement of the universe. It doesn't make matter better. It doesn't make the universe anything except horrible, because now you've put horrible in it. See, some other way to say that. So, you know, the end game is cure. Okay, so yeah, that's the desirable end, is to get people to a point where the cure, the fact is that we make the mess, and if you want to prevent the mess, then so the best solution. the best solution is never walk into the china shop, never knock over the china, never have to glue all the china back together again. And so don't make the mess, then you don't have any mess to clean up. And that's the best solution, is don't make malaria, then nobody gets malaria, and then you don't have to cure malaria. And we're essentially just a disease. We're just a syndrome. It has way too many negative symptoms to be called anything other than a horrible disease. The pain and suffering endured by the losers is not in any way compensated by the silly smiles of the winners. That's not a complicated argument. And I think it's an irrefutable argument. All right, took a pause. All right, so there's a part where they talk a lot about life not having meaning or not having purpose. And that, to me, is the complex philosophical concept that you just, in a way, shouldn't be bothered playing with, in terms of just first just point out what life is, which is just chemistry gone amok. And, that there can't be any inherent purpose it serves. It can't just show up and just happen to be a cure for the disease. Okay, that isn't going to happen. The creation process can't know in advance that it's supposed to do something productive. So there's little or no chance that it will be. And the fact that the universe isn't broken makes it more impossible that the biological infestation could accomplish something valuable, because it doesn't. There's no way for it to assess whatever is broken in the universe. And you could argue the only thing broken is the fact that chemistry can go this crazy and create organisms that can be tortured. So if there's torture on some other planet somewhere, that would be a problem in need of a solution. But clearly, nature can't know that problem exists in advance, and it can't tailor a weapon to go fix that problem. So we can't really be a solution, okay, for the universe. We can only be a problem, our existence. But anyway, back to the meaning and purpose thing. I think that's a non-starter for many people, just because your life instantly has purpose. I mean, just as a conscious being, you know it has purpose. And the purpose is, I don't want to drown in the quicksand. I'm going to struggle to keep myself from suffering and being harmed. And I'm going to struggle to acquire security. I'm going to try to acquire somebody to love me, and I'm going to try to secure these things that I went hoping anyway, that will make my life easier and prevent me from ending up in some foobar or negative condition. So, you know, if somebody starts selling, you know, meteor shields for $5 and they're really cheap, yeah, you buy one just because you want to prevent all the kind, anything. Any, you know, if it costs you $5 to take a anti-cancer pill, you're going to take it, right? Even if it's only a marginal 1% increase, whatever it is, you're going to do whatever you can to try to evade pain and suffering and bad outcomes for yourself. And that's an instant purpose. You just can't evade that purpose. So if somebody tells me my life doesn't have any purpose, well, it's going to get messed up in the fact that what does have purpose? I have eyes, I have a brain, I have logic and reasoning skills, I can do thinking, I can solve puzzles, I can do all kinds of stuff. So don't tell me I don't have purpose. I have functions. So don't tell me the functions, in some way have no capacity to ever do anything good. No, well, that's not true. So if they can't fix anything, well, of course they can. So my purpose is kind of instant. You know, the very fact that we live in a world where vulnerability is possible, where rape can happen. You know, the universe has rape is allowed, okay? And, you could show up with just the agenda of saying, well, I'm going to prevent rape anywhere it's happening in the universe. You're born into a world that has things that are broken, that are deficient and inadequate, and you have the skills to fix them and repair them and at least mitigate in some way against them. And those are just facts. So purpose isn't what we're seeking. A defense of our existence is what's, lacking, is evidence that on balance, the existence of human beings in total can be justified. So even if I can justify my own existence and say, well, I'm useful and I'm doing some good stuff, the fact is if my existence is going to come with the existence of all the people making a mess, you know, if all the litterers come with the one person who doesn't litter, well, then it's not a bargain. You know, the and that's the truth of it, is that we are a collective. We are not individuals. It's just a fact. We're a blight. One molecule of anthrax might as well be 500 molecules of anthrax, kind of thing. It just doesn't matter. So we have to defend anthrax. So defending your personal life or defending your own personal purpose is of little value, because what has to be defended is the existence of the sentient organism on the planet Earth. And that that argument ends up going back to Mars, or back to the moon, or back to any planet that's not covered with living things. And the fact is, none of us are horrified, okay, by that absence. That absence does not horrify anyone. So clearly this idea that it must exist is just a delusion, because we are saying we must exist. We must survive, because we must not feel bad and we must not endure bad circumstances. So we're going to run from dying, especially dying badly if we can. And we're going to run from anything that threatens us, okay, with unpleasantness. and that's natural. But for people to think that the whole human race has to run from that, as if the whole human race could die horribly, that's the huge logic error. The human race can't lose anything, has nothing to lose, okay? The individual slaves have everything to gain from the non-existence of their prodigy, the prevention of new slaves, the banning of slavery. Yeah, the slaves will win. So the argument should be in those contexts of not what's meaningful or purposeful for an individual, but what's meaningful and purposeful for the existence of the thing itself, the things, not particular thing, but things. And it's the things, the biological organisms, that have no ability to do anything but clean up messes they make. Yeah, so I think I would say that the philosophical position that optimism is a delusion, that, you know, you really have to fool yourself, fake it, okay, to not recognize that, yes, you're dying and this is happening and that's happening, and degrade and loss and hardship and pain and separation, and you're going to have to watch your parents die, and you're going to have to watch your siblings die, and you're going to have to do this, and you're going to have to, yeah. There's nothing to be terribly optimistic about. It's all quite horrifically bleak. And we have to force ourselves to engage ourselves in our lives by just pretending, well, I'm just going to have to pretend none of that's true, or else I'll be constantly panicked and constantly fretting, and I can't do that and get anything done. So we run from it. Now, the point is that that's for people of age. We're talking about trying to get to people before, you know, make philosophers out of people when they're, you know, 13 years old, sometime before the point where they can produce reckless, sloppy babies. And you have to make them into philosophers at that age. And so obviously that was kind of controlling those kind of mechanisms, you know, forcing there to be some real driver's ed for children, you know, instead of teaching them how to drive a car or teach them how to, in some ways, understand their sexuality. Obviously, it's got to be a lot more important to have them understand the insane responsibility of being a life maker, you know, of planting seeds on Mars, and what it will lead to and what it can evolve into. And all of that will be your fucking goddamn fault. Okay, all of the cancer, all the kids with cancer, the pro-lifers are completely to blame. It's all on them. They cause it, okay? They make it happen. So the more they, bang their placards that we must serve God's purpose because God knows what's best and all that bullshit and nonsense, they're just giving kids cancer. They're just torturing feeling beings for no good reason, but because they have a silly notion in their head of some silly, stupid purpose. And they're certainly not paying much attention to the fact that God's going to kill them in a horrible way. You know, and he will. My sister was a fanatic religious kook. Speak ill of the dead. She converted, you know, so it wasn't like she was always a religious kook. She just happened to become an insane religious kook. And, God certainly, Jesus didn't cut her any slack at all. She was killed as slow and nasty as it comes. And there's just, the religious kooks should see that and say and appreciate that, this nonsense is not the right answer. You have, misdiagnosed your circumstance. And there really isn't some loving thing that's going to cuddle you and take care of you. It just ain't going to happen. You're going to roll dice just like the rest of us. And, you get the wrong roll and it's going to be really nasty. And I could argue that in a way you fucking deserve it, you cunts, because really it really isn't that hard to figure out that you have no good reason to be so arrogant and obnoxious in your pro-lifing. Impose it on yourself. You have no right to be sticking your God tickets into little kids' pockets, because their God tickets are fake, okay? They're fake. They're false. They don't work, all right? They're of no value in playing the game of life. They will not protect your kid. They will not secure its future. It will not do any of that. And it's just such an abysmally horrid lie to pretend you have good reason to believe in your silly fables. And the fact is that we're in a dismal circumstance. You come into life and you find out, oh, this isn't going to be a fun game. It's going to be nasty. It's going to be a war against torture, and I'm going to experience it, and my mates are going to experience it, and I'm going to have to endure experiencing it, and that's not a gift. That's not I love you. You don't do that to something you love. I probably should say that's probably enough. So it's good. Look, they're arguing for extinction, but I don't, I don't see any reason to argue for it without every bullet in your arsenal. So you might as well throw the imposition argument, and you might as well throw the evolution sucks argument, and you might as well throw the asymmetry argument, the fact that, most of the goods that you can imagine are just reductions in a bad. You're just eliminating a bad, and the good is just a consequence of getting rid of the whip. That's probably a good way to explain it, is that I guess I should have said that in the asymmetry argument. I think the good metaphor or analogy to the asymmetry argument is that all there really is the whip. There are no carrots. And the whip master can use the whip like a carrot. He can make a bargain with you. Look, I won't whip you if, And so it's the same as a reward. Not being whipped ends up being the reward, and it ends up being the thing creating enthusiasm and even passion, because now they have something they can control. They can control the whip, okay? You're not chasing your love of life. You're chasing your fear of death, and frankly, it's a fear you just have to swallow, because there is no escape. You're going to be killed. And creating a new human being is not going to be you. Okay, so your story is over. And their story isn't going to be anything like your story. So quit pretending you can continue your life by creating another living human being. Because you can't. It won't be your life. It will be their life. And it might be a life where they feel totally abused by your insistence that they pretend it makes sense, or that it's fun. It's fun being in the war, because you loved being in war. Yeah, we used to sit and smoke and drink and do drugs, and now and then we had to kill somebody, but otherwise it was fun. Because you had a good time. You have no right to sentence somebody else to the foxhole. And it's ridiculous for people to say it's a good time. Again, I don't see how anybody can watch the average person go through the average process of degrade and death and say, that was fun. Yeah, too silly, too ridiculous an argument, actually. And again, all the pro-lifers haven't died yet, so they haven't gotten their full taste of God's love. So God hasn't, you know, dismally tortured them, you know, horribly tortured them yet, given their bucket of anguish and grief and horror. And yet they're talking all big about how, hey, you know, I'll give it to somebody else, even though I haven't experienced the punchline yet, you know. I haven't really done it, okay? I haven't done this storytelling stuff completely. And even though I know it's not going to be happily ever after, okay, I'm going to just pretend it is for the sake of propagating storytelling, and it's just a fake. Yeah, there is no good way to end this movie. There's no good way. It's just not going to end that way. They don't end well, and so they shouldn't be written. Anyway, okay, yeah, so that's probably enough. So again, I don't want to be too critical. Everybody's allowed to use whatever context they think makes the arguments more powerful and all that stuff. But I think the more elemental arguments from religion is nonsense. You know, the argument from evolution is hell. It's child murder. Only, you know, Freddy Krueger could see it as a beautiful thing. You know, waste is waste. Why waste suffering? Every bit of it should be precious. And if you can't come up with a really good reason to open the door to the plague, you don't open the door to the plague. You don't invite it in unless you have a damn good reason. All right. And God Says So is not a damn good reason. Okay. Right. Yeah, that's enough. So, till the next time and such, and so forth and whatnot. I'll try to do some reading, actually, more in-depth reading. It's just not my, you know, I'm just so disinterested in what Whitehead has to say, or what this guy said, or what Plato said, or what Aristotle, I mean, I just couldn't care less, frankly. So a lot of that is of little value. I think it's good to just point out that the ancient philosophers did have to deal with the fact that, well, life does seem kind of grisly, doesn't it? You know, it really kind of sucks that your wife is likely, you know, 50-50 chance your wife is going to die in childbirth. Well, that's pretty, you know, that's okay. Yeah, I don't know how you just walk up to that altar and say, gee, I'll roll those dice. I mean, can you imagine, you know, on your wedding day, standing there saying, you know, and recognizing that, well, now we're going to play a 50-50 risk game. You know, you're going to get pregnant, and there's a real chance that through these pregnancies, one of them will kill you. Yeah. I mean, if those facts were written right on in the marble, I just really don't see how anybody could commit to it. I just, you know, they must have been under some complete trance where reality isn't affecting them. So clearly most of the people that stepped into that mire must have stepped in it not even thinking about it, not even considering it. Because why the fuck would you do that? Why would you... You know, it's one thing for women to be damn afraid of men, but I would be afraid of women if there's a 50-50 chance I'm going to kill her. You know, fuck that. All right, anyway, till the next time, and such and so forth and whatnot. I mean, this idea of taking on all this responsibility for your inadvertent jabbing somebody in the eye. You know, oh, I'm sorry, I'm a cactus, I didn't know any better. I don't know what excuse you make, because it's not that far from easily visible how much we influence each other and how easy it is to ruin someone's life. And who wants to play that game? Let's see how much you can ruin other people's lives. I mean, I'm not playing that game. And I resent being forced to. Okay. Yeah, that's probably enough.